The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
This is Vince Russo's The Brand.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to 8 days a week here on The Brand. It is a Monday morning. This is how we get our week started. If you guys want to know the ins and the outs of The Brand, this is how Jeff and I get our week started every Monday morning. We give you a little potpourri of all the shows on The Brand. And, you know, Jeff, a lot of people now, because of course of, Hawk Nose, now everybody questioning our scheduling and can shows come out sooner and this, that, and the other thing. You know, everybody, let me tell everybody out there something. Relax. Everybody relax, okay? We've been doing this for 6 years, okay? Jeff and I do not do one show that we have the freedom of putting out the next day, okay, bro? We do literally dozens of shows. So when you have dozens of shows, you have to have a schedule. For instance, Jeff and I record this show. We can't start any earlier. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here, Monday in Colorado. We record this show. Jeff has to put this show together. Jeff doesn't record it and throw it up. Jeff's got to piece this show together. He's got to put in the opening. He's got to, you know, make it look clean. Jeff likes adding stuff to this show. So this show winds up coming out on Thursday. You know, Jeff, everybody needs to relax. Guys, relax. Relax. We know what we're doing here. We've been doing this a very, very, very long time. We get the shows out as quickly as we can. But with 12 shows, bro, I hate to break the news to you, you're not going to get every show an hour after it's recorded. Jeff, would you care to comment on that?
No, we do our best to get things out timely. Some shows take longer to do than others. You know, if we move around a lot of the schedule, that will impact Truthful Consequences coming out the day it's recorded. It would impact the AEW review coming out the day it's recorded, the Raw SmackDown review coming out the very next morning with Master Shoot Theater. So, you know, their show like this show isn't, you know, time relevant because we're going over last week's clips in The Brand. So there's some shows that do not need to come out immediately. So we try to make our schedule, you know, work around that. Also with the amount of different people we have on here, they're busy. They have their own schedules. So we do the best we can. I think we're doing a good job. Of course, we're live on Twitch, twitch.tv/Vince Russo Live. You can watch us live every Monday morning, usually around 10 Eastern. We record the show, be a part of it. Super Scroll wants to know who's Hawk Nose.
Bro, listen, let me tell you a little funny story. Okay. I was reading, today is Monday, guys. You're going to get this show on Thursday, but you can get it live. If you guys want to see this show in real time, it's live on Twitch every Monday morning, guys. It is live. If you can't wait, it is live. Okay. I was reading an article today, Jeff. The Surgeon General issued a statement saying it's going to get really bad this week, and the Surgeon General is citing that on, you got all these young, imbecile, dope, millennium spring breakers running around thinking they're invincible, bro, thinking they're immortal, thinking, oh, bro, this is an old person's disease. We can go to spring break. We can go to the bars. We can bang each other, whatever the hell they're doing. So like the Surgeon General is saying, you millennials like really need to wake up. Okay, because what they're finding out, Jeff, is our younger rate, younger people, it's affecting more younger people here than it did in China. It's affecting more younger people here than it did in Italy. But, you know, you got these idiots running around. It's spring break. Oh, look at me. Look at me. Look at me. Like nothing's going on. And the Surgeon General saying, God, you imbeciles, you're not freaking immortal. You can get this like everybody else. You're the problem. You need to stay inside. Okay. All right. Let me put that in its proper perspective. So, Jeff, all this while for about 3 weeks now, at least 3 weeks, I've had my brand fantasy baseball draft scheduled for March 22nd, this past Sunday. Okay. Now, Jeff, you got to understand where I'm coming from. Bro, I'm not going to cancel the draft because, like, to be honest with you, Jeff, you know, this was an outlet. Like, for 90 minutes, we can forget about what's going on. We could draft our teams. We can have fun doing it. Bro, now you really have time. Bro, Jeff, you could still work the waiver wire. You could still make trades. You could still do all that stuff. So, like, what I'm looking at is I'm not going to cancel the freaking draft. You know what I'm saying, bro? Let's do the draft. Let's have a little bit of fun. Nobody's got to leave their house to do the draft. You know, Jeff, now you could play with the waiver wire, whatever. And, bro, people were very, very, very thankful that, you know, they were writing me, Vince, everybody else canceled our draft. We're so thankful. It gives us something else to think about. Exactly what I wanted to do. Right, Jeff? So, Jeff, Friday afternoon, I get a direct message from Botkin. Okay, bro? Botkin is my son Will's best friend. Will has known Botkin since high school, bro. I like to think of myself as a father figure to Botkin, even though Botkin has his own father. But, bro, Botkin is one of those 32-year-old millenniums, Jeff, thinks he knows everything, all right? Also, Jeff, this kid, Botkin, is the most, bro, competitive person I know on the planet. It doesn't matter what you're playing. Bro, I could remember when they were in high school and we would play freaking Scene It. Bro, if he would lose in Scene It, you had to keep playing until he won. Bro, I remember on the basketball court, bro, we used to go down to the basketball court. I used to play basketball with Will and his friends. And, bro, I swear to God, I used to get Botkin in the paint. Keep in mind, bro, I'm 25 years old, older than Botkin, and he was a kid at the time. So keep in mind, bro, when Botkin was like 16, 17, like I'm 32, 34, bro, I would get this kid in the paint. I would elbow him. I would beat the shit out of him. Bro, when we won, he'd have to keep playing till they won a game. He's like that in cards. Bro, forget fantasy sports. Okay? So, bro, the most competitive person I know on the planet. So, Jeff, I'm doing my work on Friday, and all of a sudden I get this text from Botkin.
Oh, I guess you're going to send all our money back for fantasy baseball because there's going to be no baseball season this year.
So I start texting him. I'm like, what do you mean there's going to be no baseball season this year? I said, there's going to be a baseball season. We're going to draft as usual. And whenever baseball starts, it starts. So now, bro, on my phone, Botkin starts explaining to me how it's the end of the world. He's buying a gun. There's never going to be any sports again. So I finally said, you know, bro, enough. I call this kid Botkin. Okay, bro, 32-year-old. So now, bro, I'm talking to this kid and I'm like, you know what, bro? Instead of worrying about the end of the world, you really need to start worrying about your draft. The draft is 2 days away, bro. You need to start going on Yahoo, doing mock drafts, because I don't want to hear any excuses from you, bro. When baseball starts, we start the season and you're getting your ass kicked. I don't want to hear anything. So rather than the end of the world, worry about the draft. Bro, worry about the draft right now. So now, bro, he starts going into this whole thing. He segues into how all of this is the fault of the baby boomers. And the millennials are the ones that are going to take care of the baby boomers because we never saved any of our money. And now nobody has work. And now the millennials are going to have to support the baby boomers. And bro, he's going on and on and on and on. Okay. And it's the end of the world. I'm buying a gun. Like, the, bro, like, I swear to God, like, mass hysteria. Okay? So then I'm like, I'm laughing at him. So then I'm like, bot, you need to relax. Go do a couple mock drafts. Have a cream soda. Calm down, bro. So, bro, here's the last thing he tells me. You know, bro, I'm not leaving the house. You go outside, you can get it. The whole nine yards, he's going through with me, right? So I'm like, bro, relax. Go play some fantasy basketball. You know what he goes to me?
What?
I can't do a mock draft right now because I've got a tennis match in 30 minutes. I'm like, wait a minute. Hold on. Wait a minute. Whoa. Let's back up. You see what I'm saying, bro? You see what I'm saying with these idiots? Do you understand why I'm saying, bro? So doom and gloom, don't leave your house. I'm going to start shooting people between the eyes if they come near me. And he's scheduled to go out and play tennis in the middle of all this, bro. And then the millennials are going to point the finger at us. I've been in my house for 8 days, bro. I'm playing by the rules. I'm listening to what I'm being told. I'm not going out and playing freaking tennis, bro.
So Super Scrawl, Hawk knows his disco.
Unbelievable, bro.
So did he show up for the draft?
Yeah, he showed up the draft. And then after the draft, you know, he's texting me like, you know, talking crap with me about the draft. I'm like, wait a minute. 2 days ago, there was no baseball season. Now you're going to talk trash to me about how you drafted the best team in the history of fan. I thought that what's the point, bro? There's going to be no baseball season. It doesn't matter, bro. There's no baseball season. It's over. Oh my. See, bro, that is the problem. The freaking millennial. They're clueless, bro. They don't have a freaking clue. We've been saying this all along. We've been set, bro. I can go back to about, bro. I'm going to tell you, I left TNA in 2012. It started about 2010. I could go back 10 years ago with these freaking millennials who don't have a clue. Bro, you know, these ass wipes are down in spring break, bro. You know, they're all drinking out of the same beer bottles. Okay, bro.
Yeah, I don't think those are millennials. I think there's another generation now after millennials.
They're all millennials to me, bro. if you're not a boomer, you're a millennial. They're drinking out of the same bottles. You know they're drinking. You know they're banging each other, bro. Like the filthy animals that they are. They're spreading the disease all over the place. The surgeon.
Well, Troy was telling me that they're drinking beer out of each other's ass cracks.
Drinking beer out of each other's Coronas filled ass cracks. The Surgeon General is saying, do you guys not understand, like, what's going on here, bro? Completely. Just like they did me, bro. Just like they did me in wrestling. They knew more than me. I didn't know what I was talking about. Okay, bro. Meanwhile, if we look at the last 10 years of wrestling, okay, all you heroes have cut down the viewing audience by 75%. So you know what's going to happen here, bro? Here's what's going to happen. They don't listen to the Surgeon General. The millennials are going to cut down their population by 75%. Ass crack.
Is that it, did you calculate that or?
Well, we'll see, bro. What dopes? What freaking morons? Okay, bro. What happened this week on the brand, bro?
We got a lot of shows on the Realm Network now, and you're going to see, I believe, eight of the shows on this show.
Can you get them all out tomorrow?
Yeah, they're going to. Yeah, we'll get them all out tomorrow, guys.
Get them all out tomorrow, everybody. All eight shows, they'll all be out tomorrow.
Yes, and all the Patreon shows as well that this doesn't even include. But you get all these shows, guys, on the Realm Network in video and audio every single week. If you prefer listening on the go, Realm Network will give you your own private RSS feed that you can pop into your favorite podcast app, listen on the go. course, you have about 30 days or so to download and keep the videos. You can stream them off the Realm site the week that they come out. All you got to do is go to russosbrand.com, right at the top, click subscribe to the Realm Network. It is less than a dollar a week with zero long-term commitment. So we open the week with castrating the marks. And in this clip, it's Eric Bischoff talking about the listeners of the brand.
Because let's face it, anybody that's a big fan of Vince Russo clearly doesn't have much going on in their life. If you've been if you've been relegated to the point where Vince Russo is a you're a fan of Vince Russo and you look up to that guy, sex is probably not something on your weekly checklist.
God, bro, it's just so weak. it's just so weak. Like how do you even how do you that is just so weak, bro. Like what?
Apparently that was in the middle of a Blue Chew ad. Like they were selling Blue Chew.
It's just like, my God, bro. Like can you stop already? Like seriously, like the I honestly thought the embarrassing situation that happened at the WWE, you'd go away. But how do you even equate? Like, I would love to hear the breakdown of, people that listen to Vince Russo's show don't have sex. Okay, bro. Like, okay, makes sense out of that, Eric. Go ahead. They listen to me, so they don't have sex because why? Like, honestly, bro, like, that's something a freaking fourth grader would say. That is like, how do I even get mad over that? That is like, I mean, like, bro, that's the best you've got.
Well, that's interesting, Vince, because as he's sitting there saying that our listeners may not be getting sex, he's saying this in the middle of a Blue Chew ad that is directed at his audience, that Blue Chew feels that they need their product.
The people, well, Jeff, let me break this down, because you people, you never hear me. Again, I never bring them up. I only bring them up when Jeff brings something up and I have to address it. But let me break this down for everybody simply. Okay. Eric Bischoff has a show on Patreon with Conrad Thompson. Okay. Eric Bischoff every day has to look at, we have the last I looked, Jeff, how many? Is it 450?
No, it's more than that.
650.
Yeah.
650 or 850? What is it? 850?
No, it's not 8. It's 6 something.
650. No. 650. Okay. Last I looked, we have 650 Patreons. And Eric has to look at that number every single day. Now, Eric has already stated on one of his podcasts, you can go check it out. Eric has already stated, basically, he has already said, I don't make any money on my show. You can't make money in podcasting. Well, Eric, me and Jeff have been doing this for 6 years. Not only am I making a living, not only is Jeff making a living, but thank God, especially in these times, because of the beloved brand. My God, Jeff, I don't even know how many people are on payroll now. We're about to pay like I'm able to pay like another 12 people, some money. Okay. So no, bro, when you keep at it, when it's your priority, you can make money in podcasting. The problem is, Eric, let me break it down to you so you'll understand our 650 Patreons and your however many you have. Let me explain to you why. When something else comes along, okay, that might appear to be better, okay, bro, I don't drop the brand like a bad habit. You see,
they have,
bro,
51.
How much?
51 patrons.
He's got 51. We got 651. Okay. I don't drop the brand when something else better comes along. I've told the brand from day one, you are my priority. This is my job. You are number one. I have zero interest whatsoever in working full-time for a major wrestling company. There is no way in hell that would ever happen. Vince McMahon could call me right now as this show is going on, offer me $1 million. And I would say, Vince, thank you, but no thanks. My loyalty is with the brand because the brand is loyal to us. That's how it works, bro. Eric Bischoff was doing his little show with Conrad. Same with Bruce Pritchard doing his little show with Conrad. The minute the czar, is that what you call him? The minute the czar called Vince McMahon, they dropped everything. They dropped their Patreons. They made their show no longer the priority, and they went and worked for Vince. Do you not think that people don't see through that, bro? Do you not think that people don't see through that? That you literally use them for their money when you had no other options? And the second that the WWE came calling, you went running back. And then, bro, you're there. You last 83 days. And then you expect to come back and be welcomed with open arms. Bro, people aren't stupid. That's why with me, you know what, bro? I'll do my Utah wrestling. I'll do consulting jobs as they come up. I'll do a little of this. I'll do a little of that. I'll do Venom Vinyl. I'll do this. I'll do that. Nothing supersedes the brand. So, bro, rather than look at 650 versus 50, and rather than have that kill you every day where you've got to cut promos on the brand about their sexual prowess because you have nothing else, rather than do that, I would sit there and say, man, that's pretty impressive. How did Vince get 650 Patreons? We get 650 Patreons, bro, by living up to our word. That's how we get them, Eric. But this is typical. Jeff, do you think, what was I jealous when Vince McMahon called Eric Bischoff to go work for him? Was I jealous? I even said good for Eric. I put freaking Eric over that he was getting to get back in the fold with Vince. Did I sit here and rip him apart because Vince didn't call me? That's what I mean about people, bro. And that's why everybody is sitting in their house right now. That's exactly why, bro, because the majority of people out there have become scumbags. The majority of people out there want to see everybody else fail. The majority of people out there want to screw everybody else, want to step all over everybody else, want to make themselves number one, and they don't give a shit about anybody else. That's why we are all locked in our houses right now. Real simple, bro. Until we change our ways, until we change the way we think, we're going to be sitting in our houses. And this is, bro, do you notice, Jeff? Do you notice? I've been locked in my house now, Jeff, I think Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Today is day 9. Is anybody else noticing this? A lot less hate on social media these days. Really? A lot of you guys noticing that? A lot of people noticing because of the fear for your life, burying other people, bullying other people, discrediting other people is no longer a priority? Oh, I wonder how that happened. A lot of you noticing that out there? I'm noticing it. I'm not getting as much hate mail as I used to get every single day. Isn't that odd, bro? Now that you're scared for your life, you're not burying other people now? Interesting. Interesting. Eric, rather than take shots at me, take shots at the brand, if you are going to be podcasting now, and if this is going to be your main job, maybe you need to look at how Jeff and I in 6 years turn this into a very healthy and a very profitable living. Maybe that's what you need to be looking into. What's next, Jeff?
And your co-host has more patrons than Eric Bischoff.
There you go.
Yes. All right, on Tuesday, talks with Taylor Hendricks, one of our new shows. Taylor had on Princess Victoria, old school, women's wrestler, WWF era. Boy, have times changed. Listen to this clip.
You know, I meet a lot of people now who are in wrestling that don't even know what paying dues means. Like they've never set up a ring. They're complaining about getting paid $200. And I sit and I think, whew, how many rings did I set up even when I was on television? Like so many. And I remember like getting paid, my first ever payday was $5. I wasn't complaining about getting paid $200, you know? So like different things like that, like it meant more because you had to work for it and you had to earn it. And you definitely came into wrestling when you had to earn it. You had to wrestle as good as, or if not better than the men. You had to prove that you could hang. You had to do even more work because it wasn't just a sexist thing. It was also a stigma. Like women wrestled. It wasn't just about the looks. And I mean, yeah, there's that today, but it was also different back then because if we didn't have people like you back then, there may not be some of the opportunities that we have today. And I think that that's very important to pay homage to.
That's a circle. It's like with me, if it wasn't, and I'm sure you've heard, I don't have a lot of good to say about Moolah, but Moolah was a professional wrestler. She wasn't a woman wrestler. She was a professional wrestler. And for me, I have to pay homage to people like Moolah, Beverly Shade, Debbie Combs, Cora Combs, you know, oh Lord, Mae West or Mae Young, you know, those women. Mae Young got shot. She had so much heat, a fan shot her.
I'm like, I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There, even in my day, there was one night, it was me and Lanny Poffo against.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he's a sweetheart. Against Buddy Landell and Wendy Richter.
Oh, I've seen a lot of Wendy Richter's work.
All right, look up the match with me and Wendy and Buddy Landell and Lanny Poffo. Anyway, we did a spot. They threw Wendy threw me into the ropes, drops down. Buddy comes up with a front like this and hit me, and my head goes flying back. I land in the middle of the ring. Well, when he hit me, my mouth was open just right. And we were in a cinder block building, and you heard kapow. And it bounced off all four walls. And the crowd, they didn't pop. They went dead silent.
Like, did she just die?
Right. And I guess they realized I wasn't dead, and they then got mad. And they rushed the ring.
Oh, my gosh.
Buddy and Wendy had to crawl under the ring because there was only three security guards. And the three security guards could not keep the crowd off Buddy and Wendy.
Oh my gosh.
To literally crawl into the center of the ring, and they were kicking people. And it took about 25 minutes to get them out from underneath the ring.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, that's heat.
Terrifyingly so.
Exactly. Buddy walked back in the dressing room, and
I love hearing those stories from the old Jeff. Vince, like,
Jeff, I swear, I can look back on certain times in my career where I was so lucky, but it wasn't just lucky, bro. It was also smarts. Not to put myself over, but Jeff, I can remember, man, a couple of years ago, one of the last conventions I ever worked. As a matter of fact, I got to spend a lot of time with China there. So it was before China passed, not long before China passed. I went to the convention, bro. I was seeing a lot of people for the first time in a long time. I remember seeing Howard Finkel, bro, for the first time since 99. And I got to see a lot of people I hadn't seen. And bro, as everybody's mingling, Jeff, I'm looking in the corner of my eye and Jim Myers, George the Animal Steel, is sitting at a table eating by himself. Now, to somebody like me, I'm like, are you freaking kidding me, bro? Like, bro, I grew up on this man. I grew up on this man at the Garden, eating the turnbuckles, the green tongue. I grew up on this man. Me and my dad love this man, and he's sitting here eating by himself. So I'm like, that ain't happening. You know what I mean? So Jeff, I, of course, I sit there next to him, you know? And we just got to talking, and bro, he told me, remember way back in the day, Jeff, you're talking like very early 70s. Remember when the WWWF used to have shows at Shea Stadium?
Well, I don't remember, but.
Yeah, early 71, 70, shows at Shea Stadium, bro. And like, you know, he would tell me, bro, literally police. Literal police had to escort them all the way to the ring while literally fighting off the crowd. And he told me, he goes, bro, if we did not have the cops, they would have killed us. Like, that's how much heat people had back in the day. He said, bro, I would have never been able to walk to the ring. And that's why when I hear this story by Victoria here, no doubt about it. I mean, bro, 100%. I tell you this story about Jim Cornette carrying a gun with him because he's a heel, because shit like that happened to Cornette, you know, back in the 70s. You know, that stuff is a shoot. But yeah, bro, I mean, it, you know, it's hard for people to fathom that today. Bro, that's the way it was.
Last Wednesday on the Raw and SmackDown review with Stevie Richards and Ben Hameen, you guys are talking about the WWE wrestlers still traveling to get to the Performance Center to perform these shows with no crowd.
You're making them leave their families, come out of self-quarantine or whatever toilet paper massacre is going on in the world, and you're making them fly to TV in Orlando on the lieu of a possible travel ban of all domestic flights where they could possibly be stuck.
Let me interject here again to make that a very real comment. I swear to God, guys, I had to go last weekend, not this past weekend, the one before, to Salt Lake City. Stevie, I swear to God, I'm sitting on the plane. There's a very, a woman. She was probably in her mid-60s, but very neat. She was with a little girl, a very cute little girl. Bro, she's sitting right next to me. Bro, she's speaking Italian. Okay? So, like, Stevie, then, without thinking, what do I do? The plane stops. I know she's with her little granddaughter. Bro, I reach and I get her bag. And now I'm like, oh, my God. But no, Stevie, so what I'm saying is, what you're saying is very, very, very real. So go on and continue.
No, I mean, just to end that point, like the wrestling bubble or the being tone deaf, lack of awareness, the show must go on. All these examples we're giving from the Owen and everything else. It's a real problem for the company outside of just not being creative or entertaining. What they're doing right now is, and Ben had a great spin on it with the insurance, but there has to be a reason outside of we care about the safety of our performers, our staff and everything, but you're making them fly from all around the country or even make an edge drive 17 hours from Asheville, North Carolina to do a spot in an empty arena.
But, you know, Stevie, I want to interject this. Ben, listen, let's be honest, and I'm gonna point out something without a shadow of a doubt. You said making their talent. Bro, I have to ask a question. Are they making their talent do anything, or are these imbeciles just as brainwashed? Ben, how about this? Can I lay something out for you, Ben?
Please.
Last night, think about this, guys. And nobody's making them do this. Last night, how many beers did Becky and Austin chug in their mouths, out of their mouths, running down their clothes on the mat? Bro, is somebody picking up that mat? Yeah, you see what I'm saying? Bro, like what the F is wrong with you people? Like, bro, you literally cans and cans of alcohol. Now, bro, in your mouth, out of your mouth, down your clothes. Now your clothes are going to be handled by wardrobe. Those clothes got to be washed onto the mat. Now people have to pick up the mat. Nobody's making them do that shit, bro. It's that entire wrestling mentality, Ben. Like, what the F is wrong with you people?
If there was actually somebody I would goddamn trust to do the right thing and pick up the mats, it'd be the crew guys who are actually on ring crew who give a goddamn about making – because they're not worried about being over. You know, they're worried about doing their job. So maybe they're the ones who actually are, you know, doing what they need to do. But, you know, like you guys said, it was the best of times. It was the worst of times. Tale of two brands. Some other symptoms that I looked up, Stevie, you said symptoms there. Psychopathy is traditionally a personality disorder characterized by persistent antisocial behavior, impaired empathy and remorse, and bold, disinhibited, and egotistical traits. It's sometimes considered synonymous with sociopathy. Symptoms can include juvenile delinquency and impulsivity.
Like grabbing a camera and becoming the cameraman?
It could be that, you know, meanness, lacking empathy, and close attachments with others. Disdain of close attachments, maybe even your own family members, use of cruelty to gain empowerment, exploitative tendencies, defiance of authority, and destruction, a destructive excitement seeking, disinhibition, poor impulse control, including problems with planning and foresight, lacking effect and urge control, and demand for immediate gratification, and poor behavioral restraints.
You can sum up that whole soliloquy and that whole definition with just two words. Go ahead and say it.
And you guys had kind of a discussion there where are they being forced to do this or not? And you kind of asked, are they really being forced to do this? You know, even if they're not, you know how the culture goes there. They're probably scared for their jobs if they don't. I mean, don't you think there's some type of fear there?
Oh, there's no question about it, Jeff. There's no question. If some talent shows up and other talent has an issue with it, they're never going to forget that, especially when you have a boss that doesn't believe in sickness, won't even mention the coronavirus by name. There is no sick. Absolutely, bro. They know that. They know. If people are showing up and they say, you know what, I want to stay home with my family at this time, they know that will be held against them. But, bro, I'm going to put the WWE over at this point in time because I was finally reading over the weekend. You know, and again, Jeff, we're filming this on Monday. You guys want to hear this in real time. A lot of you are home now. We record this show 10 o'clock Eastern every Monday morning live on Twitch. That's what we're doing right now. But, Jeff, what I was reading yesterday was it looks like they're going to start recording some of the shows. Thank God. So now at least instead of making talent, you know, fly to the Performance Center, you know, every week. Well, maybe now it'll be every 3 weeks or every 4 weeks. So I was reading, bro, that they are going to start taping some of the shows, which I was very, very, very happy to hear.
All right, let's take a look at the latest. Goldie's Closet with Goldilocks, and she had on NWA's May Valentine.
Yeah, you've got great cleavage, great yam-yams, and mine are peeling and... It's like these things, the box is like cutting your boobs off, but that's okay. If I go like this, everybody can see how awesome that she is. And it's so different when like a woman is doing this, because if it was a guy, it would be like, I get creeped out.
How dare you do it?
That's why I'm like, let's just show our goods. I'm all about it.
I love that you are wearing your high
school. My high school. Top. Well, you don't.
It looks great. Well, the story you're referring to is like, I think I was in third grade at that time. And like my boobs were already pretty big in third grade and like almost nobody else's was. So it was like an attraction. And the boys, they didn't know how to deal with it. You know, like, I don't know if they were scared of it or they were excited by it. And I think
they're your breasts. Like, scared of it like they're boobs. Get
anywhere
on.
I go, my boobs are an attraction. There's nothing I can do about it.
Now, on the other end of the spectrum, years before that, in North Minneapolis, Minnesota, the other attraction was me, and that was because I am Italian and German with very long, dark hair. Need I go more into detail? And this attraction was nicknamed Hairy Jungle. Yeah. So,
oh my God.
So that's what the girls would sing at recess outside is Here Comes Hairy Jungle.
And emotionally, I didn't immediately react to his death. So it took a few years for it to start to hit me. And it started hitting me when I was about like 14 and 15. So I was very rebellious when I was like 14 and 15. I was not interested in going to school at all. The opportunities, they came very quickly in that sense because of the success of the book.
Did you meet any hot guys?
Of course.
Did you go out with any hot guys?
Of course.
Okay. All right. We don't have to tell any, stories. Yeah. That's cool.
We'll just keep the names to ourselves.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
My last book was published 4 years ago already, so I've been for 4 years working on this new book.
What's going on, NWA? What is your angle? What's your gimmick? You're a virgin.
Well, I am pure.
Oh, are you? Okay, not saying anything.
And there is nothing wrong with being pure, okay? So there is nothing wrong with making your manly
talk. So there's the challenge that you lick public toilets.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's what we do.
Screw that.
You wonder why everybody's getting sick when you're out licking toilets.
And then when I was 23 years old, I started writing for a Rolling Stone magazine. And I think that is one of the things that I'm most proud of.
Of course, on Thursday, another new show, Black and White, with you and Stevie Ray. You guys had a real interesting and serious conversation this past week about racism. And in this clip, Stevie Ray is talking about it in wrestling.
When it's blatant and right in your face. Mm-hmm. But like I've always said, people always ask me and my brother about racism and coming up in the professional wrestling business. And my thing to them is this, I would always say, racism is pretty much what this country was built on. Professional wrestling is 98.9% white. So what makes you think because there is a moniker that says professional wrestling on the building that all of a sudden racism stops? Racism goes wherever people carry it. And wherever it can pretty much help someone prosper within what they're doing. Then there are the ones that don't look at it like that. I'm just about business. So what I was trying to explain is this. If you can overcome stereotypical things like you just got through talking about, and as a people that we deal with racism on a daily basis, African-American, I mean, so what makes you think I'm not strong enough to deal with it within the wrestling business? I dealt with it in every business that I've ever encountered. It's just a way of life for an African-American. But the people that bring, when I say bring racism with them, I don't care about a person being racist because that's something you have to deal with. That's not you personally, but them. That's something they have to deal with. To deal with that kind of inner anger and bigotry within their hearts as they go out and live on a daily basis. The guy that's really scary, or the people that really scary, that expound on racism because they use it with power to keep people down. That's real racism. Because if you're just racist, you don't like me because I'm black, that's fine. Just don't step across the line. But if you're a person in power and you can hurt me, or you can stop me from feeding my family. You can take a group of people and put them in certain situations where they can't prosper. You see the difference?
Yeah, I do. Well, Stevie, here's what happened to me, and it really has me questioning a lot of things.
You know, Vince, you'd always talked about, you know, especially with being around WWE and Vince McMahon, that you never saw anything, you know, based on race. The you know, decisions weren't made based on somebody's race. And then I remember, you know, you had that conversation with Kenny King, and that's up on our YouTube if you guys haven't seen it, where, you know, you kind of had a like an awakening, like, you know, as a white man, how can I write for a black man? Do you think maybe there's just stuff that happens that isn't noticeable, especially after talking to Stevie Ray, because he talks, you know, about that it's there, you know, but you may not notice it because you haven't lived it. That there could always be stuff that comes across as racist that you may not even realize, you know, people are doing, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Hey, Jeff, listen, when racism is a thing that you're dealing with your entire life, you know, you see all signs of it at the smallest level. And that's what Stevie Ray was trying to say. And he again, bro, this is the difference between us and these freaking dirt sheet marks with their shows on Castrating the Marks. Stevie gave me examples, you know, Vince, this and this and this and this. And through examples, I was like, Stevie, that makes all the sense in the world. But Jeff, I got to tell you, man, the way Ed Ferrara and myself were, if there was ever any racism in the WWE, bro, when we were working there, like Vince McMahon knew, like me and Ed were not going to play that game. Like he, you know, me and Ed, bro, all we cared about was the show, putting on the best show. We didn't give a shit who you were, bro. It made no difference to us. And, you know, and I know Vince knew that. I know that he knew that. So, like, that's why I can't sit here and say, you know what, there wasn't racism before Vince Russo and there wasn't racism after. I can't say that. But what I can tell you is when I was writing the show, when Ed and I were writing the show, bro, there was none of that shit. I mean, none of that shit whatsoever. And, you know, Stevie's talking a lot about, bro, stereotypes as far as the characters are concerned. And, you know, that's why he did not want to go to the WWE, because he'd be stereotyped. And Stevie gave great examples of how he thought his own brother was stereotyped, you know, in the WWE. So it was really, bro, really, really a great, great show. And just getting to hear the insights of a black performer, you know, in a white business were freaking fascinating. And like I said, through examples, I'm sitting there and I'm saying, bro, you're right, man. You're dead on. You're not going to get a freaking argument from me, bro.
Also, this week on the Triple Threat podcast with the franchise, Shane Douglas, Chad asks Shane an interesting question about what the pay structure may be like for the WrestleMania performers this year without certain revenue streams.
Yeah, I talked to a former WWE superstar earlier today who brought up a great thing, and it was, how do they work the payoffs for an event like WrestleMania, where your payment or your payoff is determined on the gate merchandise sales, everything going on in and around the WrestleMania weekend. How do these guys get paid? I equated it to a C-level house show, that, you know, Brock Lesnar's showing up and is he getting a $300 draw for the evening? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what I don't understand, how that's going to be worked out. And, you know, you're basically going and watching guys. It looks to me like it's people working in the developmental, like how they have it now. These guys practice the matches, they practice the promos, and now we're watching that. And how are they getting paid for this? Is this going to be, you know, a new structure? And again, unprecedented, but what are they going to do?
Yeah, my guess would be that Vince is either going to have to like prorate the number and say, okay, you're getting paid X number of dollars, or based off of some percentage of the buy rate, or some combination of those two. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting question, and I don't know the answer to that. But it's certainly going to, I'm sure those guys are going to really be, you know, questioning, you know, as they get closer to that, if Vince hasn't already answered that in-house, to how that's going to be handled.
Who was your guy? Was it Arnold Skolin that you'd go to for the draw or whatever you were getting for the house? Who would you go to?
Yeah, Arnold would be the guy. The golden. What do they call him? The golden boy.
Golden boy.
Arnie would be the person you go to for the draw. If I needed some like kayfabe information from the office, I would go ask some of the other agents that I thought might be more in the know. But in this kind of thing, I can see two sides of the coin. I can see where Vince would be kayfabing and hoping that nobody asks the question, but I also know the boys, they must be asking the question how the payoffs are going to be done. And if you're one of the guys that have worked themselves finally into that semi-main or main event spot,
right?
And well, you're thinking, cha-ching, I've hit it. This is like hitting the lottery for the year. And now this happens. There's no question it's going to have an impact on their bottom line. How that's going to be handled, very curious there. If there's any of the boys listening in, please hit us up and let us know, because I'd be very interested to hear how that's going to be handled.
Yeah, unbelievable. And you think about what that could have done for future earnings going into SummerSlam and the rest of the year, next year is WrestleMania. How is it all affected? I wonder, do you think Vince is walking around with envelopes? Maybe like in an indie promotion, he's walking around with envelopes. Here you go.
Yeah.
Brock's is a little bit bigger than everybody else's.
It's funny, Jeff. I think I actually started freelancing for the WWE. It had to be 1994. I think it was 1994. And one of the very first people that I met was the assistant editor of the WWF magazine, Louis Gianfrido. And Louis had been there forever. Louis was an old timer. Louis was the person he was the tightest with was Arnold Skolin. And yet, Arnold was the money guy. Exactly what Shane said. Arnold had all the money. Arnold used to give all the boys their payoffs, like dead on, like that. That's what Arnie used to do. But man, Jeff, I'm not even going to say it, but what a hit the WWE is taking. What a freaking hit. Bro, WrestleMania is the entire year. Bro, they got their sortie. They got their TV deals. But WrestleMania, and not only that, bro, not only that, now think of how this affects the sortie deal. They can't fly over there. So, my God, bro. We've talked a lot with the WWE about greed, bro. We've talked a lot about greed. We talked a lot about putting money in front of everything. And look at where we are. I cannot even imagine when you look at where the stock is, when you take away the WrestleMania income, when you can't fly to Saudi, bro, you can't sell tickets. Not that they were selling tickets anyway, but I cannot imagine the financial hit that the WWE is taking right now, bro.
Playing off of that, in this clip with Disco Inferno, Alliance, Tigers, Bears, and Disco, I ask you guys that question about the loss in revenue that they would normally get with fans at WrestleMania. But you guys always talk about how WrestleMania is its own brand, and to a lot of people, it's bigger than WWE. And this is a major, major, major source of revenue for them for the year. You look at all the ticket sales, the access, all the merchandise they sell that weekend. Why? Like, I'm trying to figure out the logic in doing this with none of that when, you could just postpone it until, like you said, wait and see what happens, put it in the summer, whatever it is, where you can get all that revenue for it, have your big WrestleMania, instead of just doing like a show with no fans and no fan revenue. It's not like they have all these huge major storylines going on. Like, if you want to build to these big matches, but you're just you know, doing it, it looks like wrestling training when there's no crowd there. So from a business point of view, I don't understand why they want to go through with it.
What if some of these guys have deals where they have to perform like in their contract, like they have to perform at WrestleMania that date?
I wonder.
There's issues here. Yeah. What if he's going to lose? Like he's probably losing his ass, right? What if he is risking losing more, not having it all together? I mean, that's ultimately what it seems like. This is a stop loss. He's going to lose his ass, but not having it, he'll lose his ass even more. You know what I'm saying? And so will the wrestlers.
There's also two other things that come into play here. Okay, Jeff. One is Vince, and one is business. Okay, guys. I am not bullshitting you. When Vince McMahon says there is no sick, I am not bullshitting you. Okay, bro, this is Vince is not going to let a sickness shut him down. I'm telling you, bro, I worked with this lunatic. When you sneezed in front of him, he gave you a look like he wanted to kill you. You had to go in another room to freaking sneeze, bro. That's number one. Number two, Jeff, what we don't know is there's insurance involved. You know, they got to take out insurance when they do big things like that. So, bro, who knows if it's a natural disaster or a situation like this where they can't put on the show. Well, bro, I don't know. Maybe an allotted it's a timing issue. You know, that, well, we had to put on the show somewhere else and we lost all this money. So, bro, there's a whole insurance thing. But, bro, it comes down to two things, Jeff. This is what it comes down to. Vince, the psychopath.
And one thing I was thinking about since that show, Vince, and we didn't discuss it, was you look at the shareholders and there's at least two lawsuits already with WWE not being in their best interest. I think one's over the Saudi deal and one's over XFL. When you look at this, and I'm a shareholder, and I know WrestleMania is your biggest income of the year, are they not looking in the best interest of the shareholders by not postponing this till later on in the year?
They don't give a shit. Vince McMahon cares about Vince McMahon and the bottom line with Vince McMahon. He don't give a shit about shareholders. He don't give a shit about the boys. He don't give a shit about the crew. He gives a shit about Vince McMahon, bro. He gives a shit about the almighty dollar. I want to throw something out there, guys. Listen, we've all taken hits. Like I have a little portfolio for retirement. You know, guys, not that I have a lot of money, but I swear to God, I was looking somewhere online the other day about, you know, I guess you could look up people's net worth, and it was saying my net worth was $1.5 million. And I'm like, where is this $1.5 million?
I never believe those things. They just don't seem to make sense.
Right hand to God, bro. Like, not even close. Like, bro, not even close. I was a writer, for crying out loud. I wasn't getting paid like a freaking talent. But anyway, my point is, you know, I got a portfolio for Laura saying the albums. My albums are worth $1.5 million. I got a little portfolio, Jeff, for retirement. Bro, my portfolio has taken an astronomical hit. I can't even look at it. I can't even look at it. But here's what I'm going to recommend to everybody. I think we need to all practice this, okay? Guys, we have to help each other in this time of need. And we really do need to find a way to put money back in our communities. And I think one good way of doing that, bro, is, guys, pick your favorite local restaurant. You know, maybe you and your family go to it. Maybe you go to it. Bro, maybe it's just a bar where there's bar food, whatever it is. And, bro, even if just once a week you call and order in, and you have them deliver it to you, even if once a week, bro. Maybe you frequent that restaurant once a week. Just, bro, like consciously once a week, pick a restaurant, pick a local restaurant, call in an order, give them some business. I know I'm going to start doing that, bro, because, you know, I mean, anything I can do to help my fellow neighbor. Jeff, I swear to God, like, man, see, this is where it gets rough. It's like, Jeff, I live in a retirement community. And like, I want to go to the clubhouse, and I want to tell them, listen, I'm younger than a lot of people here. Like, if they need somebody to go out and get their groceries or whatever, I'm ready, I'm willing, I'm able to do that. I will do that. I will get their groceries for them. I will leave them on the front porch. But my God, bro, we're at the point now, you even said it earlier in the show, we're even afraid to touch anything. You know what I'm saying? But I'm going to do whatever I can in the safest way I can to just, you know, bro, put money out there, you know, help a neighbor, you know, like whatever we have to do at this point in time. But I just wanted to throw that out there. What's next, Jeff?
Well, we wrap up the week now on Saturdays with Bucket Full of Chicken Necks. And in this clip, you're talking about the Corey Feldman documentary.
This ties right in, bro. I just watched the documentary. It's on YouTube, The Death of Two Coreys, put together by Corey Feldman, who I do not think is out of his mind. You know, bro, there are a lot of people that think Corey Feldman is nuts. Bro, Corey Feldman has been telling the same story for the last 20 years. You know, maybe he's a bit eccentric, but if you look at interviews Corey Feldman has done the last 20 years, he's been saying the same thing. Bro, is he weird? Is he a little out there? Yes. But being weird and being a little out there doesn't necessarily equate to you being a liar. So, you know, I really believe there's something to somebody's story never changing. And when you watch the documentary, it's very interesting. But a lot of what it's based on is the word of Corey Haim. You know, Corey Haim came forward and basically, according to Feldman, keep in mind, this is according to Feldman, Corey Haim told him that he was physically raped by Charlie Sheen on the set of Lucas. He went into the details of the rape, which they talk about on this documentary. Charlie Sheen vehemently denies it. And Corey Haim's not here. So, you know, Corey Haim tells a story. And, you know, there's really no way of knowing if that story is not true or is true or not. With him not being here, we never heard it from Corey's mouth. So hearing it from Feldman, you know, it's secondhand news. If Corey Haim were here, you know, he could take a lie detector test and whatnot. But my point is, you hear a lot of names resurface. A lot of the same names always resurface, you know. And, you know, a lot of people in Hollywood, bro, you were hearing about Kevin Spacey for years. You know, bro, a lot of the same names resurface, bro. But I'm telling you, Weinstein is going to drop the dime. And, bro, I think heads are going to roll. I mean, I think heads are going to roll. Okay, let me go on, bro.
And again, guys, you can get all these shows plus more video and audio. No long-term commitment, guys. It's $3.95 a month, which comes out to less than $1 a week. Give us a shot. All you got to do is go to russosbrand.com and click subscribe to the Realm Network right at the top.
And guys, I know I'm trying to go on Twitch like at least daily just to make sure everybody's okay, bro. So, you know, maybe for an hour or so we could take our mind off of things. You guys can follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/VinceRussoLive. Jeff, I know you're on Twitch quite often. Tell everybody about that.
Twitch.tv/JeffLane22. You guys can come hang out with me while I play some games. We discuss drinking beer out of butt cracks or anything you want to talk about. Twitch.tv/JeffLane22.
That is it, everybody. Listen, man, you know what you need to do. Just keep on doing it, guys. Protect yourself. Protect other people. You know what you need to do. That is it, everybody. Thank you for joining us. We will see you later on today. We will see you tomorrow. We are around 24/7. God bless everybody. Take care of yourself and take care of each other.